Everybody, this is Marcia Reiner with Profit with a Plan podcast. You need to watch this show today. I've got Matt Tracy on here talking about the risks that we all take on the platforms and how to really manage the scare that's going on in Facebook, the scare that's going on Insta, wherever there's scares going on. Where can you hold on to your customers and make sure you can still communicate with them? So check us out on Profit with a Plan podcast. Hey, entrepreneurs, are you trying to make bigger profits in your small business? If you're like most of us business owners, increasing your profitability is always on your mind, and you're probably looking for ways to grow your revenue while growing your company. Well, you found a podcast that shares ideas to help you do just that. I'm Marcia Reiner, known as the Profit Booster, and I'm a business growth strategist. I've helped tons of small business owners to establish and implement a tangible plan that guarantees increased profitability, guide your growth, and plans for a future exit. Because building a highly ready, highly profitable, and sale-ready business creates a win-win scenario. That's more money now and a windfall when it's time to let go. And I want to share strategies that I've learned with you on today's Profit with a Plan podcast. But before we get started, I have something special just for you, my podcasting audience. If you ever wanted to supercharge your business, avoid profit plateaus, operational headaches, and growth roadblocks, well, I've got a brand new Profit Booster playbook just for you. You'll uncover three essential strategies and the quick way to take action on them. This is not just a single page report. It's filled with impactful strategies, actionable steps, and expert guidance to help you elevate your profits. Go download this free playbook at boostingprofit.com. All right. My guest today is internationally renowned Matt Tracy. Matt combines a background of digital marketing and ecological science. He knows what it takes to build systems designed for growth. His book, Natural Orders, draws from track records of generating millions of dollars in email revenue for businesses across the U.S. and Australia. Matt writes and speaks to help small businesses, online business owners, to discover the natural order in their own email marketing databases and how they can leverage them to take their business to the next level. Welcome to Profit with a Plan, Matt. We're excited to have you on.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, we always love a man with an accent. So you're always welcome on here. So you have a unique way of how you got into this business. And I know you just didn't wake up one morning and go, I'm going to grow businesses using emails. How did you get into this space?
Yeah, there's a whole story behind that. I mean, actually, when I went to the States, I got into the digital marketing side of things. I spent some time in the Bay Area. But before that, as you alluded to in the intro, yeah, my background is actually in ecological science. When I first started doing things in marketing, I noticed some of those really superficial similarities that everyone notices between, say, like a natural system and what you see in marketing. So, for example, niches, like you have a niche in your market and there's a niche in the environment, right? Or another one that's often thrown around is the idea of a total addressable market. We often speak about that in business, but the same thing exists in what you call carrying capacity in an environmental science context. So there were some of these really superficial things, and I thought, oh, they were always interesting, and they maybe gave me a little bit of an edge in the beginning. But it was when I started getting into email marketing and started working with these large databases of customers that I really started to see some big similarities and some big patterns and some directly transferable ideas from ecology to how you should best manage and grow your database over time. And we can get into that in a little bit more detail if you're interested.
Yeah, that's actually really crazy because I would have never connected those dots that ecology and email marketing would have a connection, right? But you drew the lines nicely, but you've kind of left us in the dark. So I'm going to have to dig in a little bit and try and figure out where those lines go for those of us that are not in that sphere of having a space in ecology. So first of all, draw a line for me. Where Put it in simple language. You would put some funny things in there, but how do you draw a line to ecology and email marketing?
So to keep it really simple, there's really two ways. So the first thing is there's two big common mistakes that people often take when they're doing email marketing. The first is by not building good engagement. So having really low opens and clicks. What this invariably leads to is poor deliverability and really high unsubscribes. So it's actually like the composition of the database is a little bit like an ecosystem. It collapses in on itself. Another way sometimes people run into this problem is through trying to make things too complex too quickly. Again, just like an ecosystem, you need to start with simple building blocks and build them on top of each other, not try and pencil out this masterpiece automation strategy from scratch, right? It always fails. So I call that top-down failure, or the top-down cascade, to again lean on an ecological analogy. But what might be more fitting for your audience is the second problem that people often run into, and this is what I call the bottom-up cascade, or which is basically having the rug pulled from under your feet. And this is the other problem that people often fall into, is it's referred to as platform risk. So building an audience completely reliant on something like Facebook or Instagram or Amazon or even Google, and not investing enough time to actually grow an audience that you own, and that you where the data's right there for you to go back to. That's the second mistake people make, and that's sometimes referred to as the walled gardens. So the ecological analogy lends itself to this idea of how to best build your own walled garden, right?
Oh, I love it. I love it. And we were just talking about how Australia is kind of a walled garden at some points, you know, as building an island out there that, you know, you have and can protect.
Yeah, we love it.
Interesting how now it's all being visual for me and connecting those. But you know, I think one of the biggest fears business owners have today, and what the rumors are all saying, is that email's dead. Do you really believe that email's dead?
It's so crazy. It's starting to change now, but for years I've been the guy shouting from the rooftop, like, build an email list, own your audience. The writing's been on the wall for a long time. I mean, some of the examples I use in my book for some of this platform risk stuff go back to 2012, when Facebook first changed from being completely open and free to introducing ads, right? And some of the people who had built big audiences on there kind of bemoaning those changes and feeling like they've been duped. So, I mean, it goes back a long way. But even when you just look at the fundamental proposition for how you're meant to build a business online, it has always been about owning your audience. It's always been about controlling the supply of attention. And I think emails always lend itself to that. I mean, I got started in digital marketing doing all sorts of different things, as everyone does. Done a bit of traffic, done a bit of like CPC, done SEO, done all sorts of things. But they say, you know, you build yourself into a T-shaped marketer. I saw email, I just thought, well, this is clearly the best thing to spend your time on. And I mean, look, I always talk about this, but look, it's the largest and most active channel of users on the internet. I mean, it's 4.5 billion people. And compare that to Facebook or Meta's audience, which includes WhatsApp and Instagram. That's like 3.5 billion by comparison. Average user spending about 2 to 3 hours per day in their inbox. I probably do more. You probably do more, business owners, right? But not only that's the highest engagement channel. So you compare whatever the post reach now on something like Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, which is abysmally low in the single digit percentage. If you're sending an email that has an open rate of 35%, that just it's kind of, yeah, it's night and day difference, right? It's also the highest ROI channel if you use it right. I won't go into that too much, but the big thing is it gives you direct access to your audience. You can take your offer direct to market because that audience is right there in front of you and you own it.
I think that's the biggest thing, is you own it, right? Nobody can switch an algorithm or a back of the office and shut you down because maybe, you know, you had something controversial in your message that went out, or even just because they felt like flipping a switch. It's yours and you own them and communicate. So I love that that's still the idea with it. But I think people are saying back to themselves, oh, I got 20,000 emails sitting in my inbox that I haven't gotten a chance to go through yet. So, I'm just click, 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 delete and missing them. How do you, I mean, there's, I guess there's got to be some tools that we can use, I guess, on the deliverability to engage that audience better, right? And you've got some ideas on that?
Yeah, definitely. So I'll go into this in a bit of detail. So a lot of it comes down to copywriting and sales psychology, as you'd expect. One of the things I say sometimes, which is sometimes seen as a bit contrarian, is don't try to cut through. I mean, if you're in a busy email inbox, don't try to say something radically different and stand out. The way people work, from my experience doing email for 10 years, is that people are actually looking through their environment for things that, confirm their existing beliefs about the world. So if they've got a problem, they're constantly looking around for things that kind of reinforce the fact that they have that problem. So you sh there's a classic quote from the copywriter Robert Collier. He says, "You must enter the conversation already going on in your prospect's mind." And it kind of goes along with that, right? So don't try to cut through. Don't try to stand out in a noisy world, as some people might put it. You just say things that people already agree with, and then they'll select you out from the noisy environment that they're trying desperately to make sense of. So you meet people where they're at and you say things that they already agree with, basically.
Interesting. It's a contrarian approach at something that's not contrarian. You're going along with what's going on in their head. So very
Absolutely.
interesting play on words there. But I think that that's really a better way of doing it because so many people say, "Oh, be different, stand out, do something, right? Grab their attention, hook, right?" That's the whole idea of how you get these things started. But I like the idea if you're coming in with a yeah, or an agreement or a validation of what they're already thinking, then they're going to be more apt to read it because they feel comfortable in that space rather than having something, like you said, out in left field that's going to maybe grab their attention, but it's not making it, they're not forcing them to a different viewpoint. Is that what you meant?
Absolutely. I mean, ultimately, something that's outside of my belief system is a threat, right? So as grim as that may sound, that's just the way that we go through the world. We want things that reconfirm our existing beliefs, and that comes down to the problems we're facing, the solutions we're looking for, and the products that we're potentially considering. And those three things actually map out what the major parts of what are called the five stages of awareness. So you're either completely unaware about a problem, you're aware that you have a problem, you're aware of solutions to that problem, or you're aware of products that can help you solve that problem, right? And that is the way that you need to structure your communication with email marketing, for any marketing channel, really, for your content strategy, for what you're putting out on social media. But in email marketing, it becomes even more important, not just because of that competitive aspect of it, but in terms of taking people through a journey. That's the thing that really sets email apart from all the different channels, is you've got this long-term narrative that you're building with people, because you're there in their inbox. It's a little bit more personal already, but it's a direct line of communication over a long period of time.
I like it, and it can be done over nurturing, right? So you can come in and you can start the conversation and you can continue the conversation. Someone used to call it a soap opera sequence, right? That you would leave them with a little bit of a cliffhanger and then you'd deliver the next message that logically came along with it. I'm sure there's a couple dozen or hundreds of methodologies you can use in your email structure. It still goes back to the fear of, well, either I'm bothering them in their email or I'm, because it's something that sits there, right? And it's something that dings and comes in. How do you avoid that? Is that by just coming in and agreeing with them that they'll be more welcome to having your emails come in?
Yeah, there tends to be two schools of thought about this. Some people who are really like, okay, just increase email frequency really high, and just send
Sure,
people
three times a day you're going to
emails
get an email from Marcia. No.
every day. Right. No. And it can work. I tend to be on the lower frequency side, but what they have in common is that it's all about leading with value. You're not sending sales emails 5 times a week. And even if you are sending just twice or 3 times a week, Again, you're always making sure that you're creating value with every email you send. The beauty of those five stages of awareness that I spoke about is if you are meeting someone where they're at, it's not about, oh, just trying to get attention and trying to like hack into people's awareness. It's not about that at all. It's about actually trying to help people solve whatever problem they're facing. So if you're coming to someone where they're at with something valuable to say to them that they're actually going to get value out of, that's going to stand out in the inbox and that's going to help people progress to the next stage.
I love that. I love it. Okay, so enough with the negative. I played a little bit of the devil's advocate in email because I know this is on everybody's mind going, oh, I don't want to bother them. But you know what? Something that I love about email is the comparative to social media, right? I may be on there looking at cat videos or, you know, food that someone took pictures or their travels or family or whatever. But the sad thing about that is it disappears so quickly, or it gets lost in the thread of everybody else posting cat videos. Where an email, even if they don't see it right when you send it, it's in their inbox and they will get to it one way or another sometime down the line. And they will either read it or delete it or whatever they'll do, but they'll at least, it'll still be there. It doesn't disappear, I guess is what I'm saying. And I love that it can stay forever, kind of like that, you know, YouTube concept that, you know, your videos last there forever. You know, your emails could last forever too. So the strength of the probability of them opening it is higher than having them miss it in a thread.
This ephemerality unfortunately defines all of the media around us today. And you could argue that with email marketing that the inbox also has that to a degree, right? Because we've got so many emails coming in, it is almost like a feed. But you're right, it is there. You can go back to it and you can reference things you previously said. Yeah, I completely agree. It does have a little bit more staying power than some of these other types of social media where there is just so much more noise and things are moving so much quicker.
Well, and I think you can adjust your email too. You know, gone is past is the long, you know, book that you would send in an email. You still write in shorter with a lot more white space in it. But I think having that scannability to your email will also get it read. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of ideas that make your email more attractive to the audience. In this, you know, quick, you got me 2 seconds now. It's no longer second 7 seconds of attention. You got two, you know, to get them to read further, right?
Yeah, definitely. I guess it all depends on your audience. So some audiences are really going to sit down and read a 10,000 word essay that you send out once every 2 weeks. That can be a great way to do it, like low frequency, high value, high quality. Or you can pepper them with shorter value packed emails every day of the week, right? I mean, it all depends on your brand. I mean, look, the longer I'm in email, the more it comes down to brand experience and managing that brand experience and setting expectations, right?
I like that. So tell me how brand experience for the user might be improved using these emails. Since we want to get people to use emails more often and reference them, I think I personally think it's a fantastic tool to engage with our audience. But what are some of the wins that we can do?
Yeah, don't spam people. Let's see if I could really sum it up. Send valuable things to people, like actually make someone's, like help someone solve a problem or provide value some way. I sometimes say, entertain, educate, enlighten. If you do one of those things every time you send an email, you're never going to have any problems. And you know, you can do that with a sales email. Like if someone's at that point where they're really like weighing up different solutions to a problem they're facing, and you say, well, look, I do have this product that can help you solve that problem. That's actually a very valuable email sent at the right time. And this comes down to another buzzword in email marketing, like your segmentation and personalization. What personalization really means is you've sent something with good timing and it's highly relevant. And there's all sorts of different ways you could do that. You could, use some of the data you've collected about that person to create a segment of everyone who looks like that person, and then really tailor the messaging just for them and sent at the right time, just as they're about to open it. And that's what it's really all about.
I love it. So segmentation is a really good tool for understanding your audience and going back to your understanding the data, right? You know, that you're getting and having on this. So if we segment them, and we break the email into a more personalized piece, they're going to be more apt to open it, they're going to be more apt to take action on it, and then they're going to feel more engaged or connected to the sender, us, right? Because we personalize that email. But I think it's always hard to kind of figure out, well, where are they on that journey? How do we know that they're at the peak of the pyramid that says that they're ready to buy now, or if they're still in their journey down trying to figure out what the solution might be for them? Is there any way through email that we can engage that and get more closer to that?
Absolutely. So either looking at engagement, so which emails people engage with, or even where they've been on the site, you can track where people have been on your own owned media, by using tracking pixel and cookies and sending it back into your email marketing system. And then you can tag people based on where their attention has been. You can make guesses about those audiences. So talking about those five awareness states again, one of the first things I recommend people build when they're trying to take their email strategy to the next level, because a lot of people are sending campaigns or newsletters, or they might have cart abandonment or something set up. But my typical client is someone who comes to me and it's like, look, we know we can be doing a lot more with email. What does that look like? One of the first things is often this. So segment your audience down into what stage of awareness they are, based off those five stages I was talking about. But then based on engagement is how you progress people through those stages of awareness. So if I'm sending a whole sequence of content emails, which are all about drawing the problem into your attention, so whatever the problem might be, if you engage with those emails, you follow links and you're on the site and you're looking around and there's a good signals that you're actually trying to solve that problem, that's how we can graduate that conversation to the next stage, right? So that's how you start automating your customer development. And then you can have all sorts of different stages in your database of people mapped out who are automatically getting tagged based on their interest, based on what pages they're visiting, based on how they're interacting with different kinds of emails. And from there, you can make really interesting marketing decisions. You can then say, okay, we'll send a campaign out to people who meet just this criteria, and it'll be super personalized, super segmented, super timely and relevant, rather. And that's how you're going to get really good results in email.
I love it. It's definitely starting to see like feel like an ecosystem, right? When you
That's right.
understand the data and you can connect the dots as to where they are. So for the everyday business owner, for maybe in the smaller space, that sounds like an enterprise level direction. Is that something that can be done for smaller companies as well? That you can manage that kind of data and connections?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so I spend a lot of time hanging out with startups and going to events for startups and like larger funded startups that have quite sophisticated like data engineering operations, right? And I'm always trying to think, how can I take some of this stuff that works really well, where they've got a big database and they're running it through something like Segment, and they've got all of this cross-channel marketing stuff. How can we really consolidate that down in a way that a small business owner can get all of the advantage out of that? And the email list is what it's all about. You don't have a sophisticated data operation, and you don't have the budget for it, and you don't have the time for it. So the
Or you
best way
don't have a
to
crew of 25 that's managing just your
do
emails.
you're not getting a data engineer, but the closest thing you can get is a savvy marketer who's going to run your email database and collect data about your audience that you own and that you can send everything back into and build a really, really valuable thing over time. That's what it's all about for me.
Oh, I love it. I love it. So it's possible that we can still work and reach our customers through email with a small team and just the right information. And I think the key is the right architecture, right? The right plan that says, if this happens, then this happens, right? And then, I mean, today's automation and AI and tools and software and things that are available to us with the correct architecture, you can have it run by just a short, small number of people that are able to manage it and still get the system going in the
Absolutely.
way that it
Yeah,
could.
I mean it's a one-man job, really.
Love
You
it.
have to know what you're doing. I mean that's why I wrote the book. I mean the book answers the question, what comes next after you're doing basic email? And people always fall into those same mistakes. I think the ecological analogy really helps people avoid some of that stuff. Because I mean talking about finding some of those segments and sending a campaign to some dedicated segment, people previously would say, oh, well, I'm going to build this whole big sales sequence that's going to go out to all these different people. You don't do that. You start with simple building blocks, you test things, and then if it works, you automate it. What do they say? Premature optimization is the root of all evil. It applies to email as well. You've got to manage it the right way. And you're right. I mean, we have more power and technological leverage than we've ever had, but you do have to know how to use it correctly.
And set up those building blocks. I love that premature automation.
Yeah.
They had I drive an electric vehicle, and they had one I think it was last year, a year ago on the Super Bowl, they had a commercial premature electrification or something like that. And it was just so funny. But it's common. We jump too fast. We create something, too big, too fast, and we don't know if step one is actually working yet. Hence funnel building and things like that that we have going, or automated webinars. And we haven't tested the webinar yet. We haven't done the work, the foundational work in
Yeah,
the
and
email campaign to make it
you'll
work.
resonate with this, and your audience will as well. I mean, so much of this is just about being an entrepreneur, right? The longer I'm in this, the more I realize, like, don't think ahead too much. Sometimes it just comes down to taking action, taking simple actions, and then you connect the dots looking backwards, right?
I
It's
love
so
it.
true for so many things in small business, entrepreneurship, and really even your email marketing stuff. We see some of these examples of this really robust, crazy automations, like a spider web of all these connections, and that you can get there, but
Did
it
you
takes
yet?
time. There's this thing called Gall's Law as well. It's a complex system that works was always before that a simple system that worked. And it applies to everything when it comes to email and I think business as well. It starts with simple building blocks.
I love it. That is, if that's not the lesson of the day right there, having something. I think the key word was simple system, and then the second most important word was that worked, right? And when you can take that and put it into your hiring system, your sales system, your marketing system, your communication system, everything you have, it's got to start with something very simple that works.
It's so
And
true.
yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, my bent, like business-wise, is really like operationally focused. I mean, sometimes people have said about email marketing is the plumbing of marketing. I think that's probably a good analogy.
That's
It's
good.
kind of, yeah. But it's really like the operational piece of your whole marketing system, right? And when you look at other parts of operations like SOPs, that same thing applies, right? You don't build the perfect process document on your first go. You start as simple as possible. You start with two or three lines and then you build it out over time as it needs to develop.
You know what? That's I'm stuck on the plumbing thing, but yes, you're right. Because here's the plumbing thing, which makes total sense, right? People, so one of the biggest problems people come to me for is they want to grow their revenue, and they think, oh, I just need to make more sales. Well, oh, let's take a step back. You need to talk to more people and have better conversations that can convert and lead to more sales because you want more revenue so that you can. I mean, you see how all the dots connect to it. Email marketing is that plumbing that flows through the conversation that
Oh,
you
yeah.
start when you run your ad or talk to someone or meet somebody in line at the grocery store, that you can funnel them through everything that you're doing until they become a customer and then some. Where you keep the customer, And it's that line that goes through everything.
Goodness, you're really speaking my language. To someone who also speaks about this, and I mentioned him in the last chapter of my book, is Perry Marshall, who wrote 80-20 Sales and Marketing. He says you can break down any funnel into components of traffic, conversion, and economics. He says the biggest mistake people make is trying to start with traffic, completely underoptimized. The best thing to do is to start with expanding the value of your existing customers. Once you have that system in place, then you can put traffic into that system and you're going to have a better outcome. It's going to lower your customer acquisition cost and it's going to make you have a better business.
Love it. Love it. There's so many gems here, Matt. The business owners, I hope that you're listening and catching this because this is so true that we put the cart before the horse. Or we get into business because, and I've said this at least 1,000 times, that we get into business because we know our jam. We can do our thing really well. And then we mistakenly wrap a business around it and jump to the fifth floor. Well, marketing is the same way. We go after these sexy ideas that, tell us we can do all these things and we're going to have more business that comes, pours in while we sleep at night, kind of thing. And we forget about all the foundational pieces of learning how to crawl, learning how to walk, learn before we learn how to run. And I think we do that with email marketing as well. It's
Yeah,
terrible.
absolutely. And I mean, this whole idea of the system that sells while you sleep, I mean, that's always been the golden fleece when it comes to email marketing. And you can get there, but it takes time and testing, and it is absolutely possible. I mean, I've built it before, as it does work, but you need to start from the end and work towards the beginning.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Well, and I think that it's like you said, it's a whole bunch of simple systems that are combined into a bigger system and they all work, right? And start where you're at, just like your buyers, right? You want to meet them on the pyramid where they are in their buyer's journey and have that conversation that would logically move them to the next what next level, next space, right? Or kick them out so you're not talking to them anymore because they didn't
Oh,
want
yeah.
you in the first place.
Absolutely.
But I think if we did this with our emails, it's going to be more personal than you can get on social media or you can get by running ads. That's usually the first part of it to bring them into your circle or your sphere, right? And then start that communication conversation. And what better way to do it is on a platform that you own and that you can
Absolutely.
control and doesn't really cost you a penny except for making sure that the systems are running properly.
That's
Nobody
right.
can take it away. So it all goes back to that platform that, that platform risk and the control that you have. And we have so little control anymore.
And also, it's a real crossing of the threshold in terms of your brand. I feel like brands these days are about creating a world that you're trying to get your potential buyers to enter into. There's a narrative about it. There's a whole theme about what a potential product means to them, or even a service. When someone gives you their email address, that is this kind of crossing of the threshold that enters into this world that you're creating. And that's when you can really start amping up the narrative element of what your brand experience is all about. That's a whole other topic that would have a podcast and potentially
Or three.
That's right. But I mean, it can be a really powerful thing. And it's people sometimes say it's a personal one-on-one channel. I think that kind of gets to it a little bit, but it misses the full picture. I mean, it's all about creating this world for people to enter into, and email's the best way to do that.
And why wouldn't you want a personal one-on-one channel with your ideal customer, even though you can duplicate it and automate it and multiply it and have multiple one-on-one co conversations going at the same time? But that's what buyers want, is they want to feel like they're understood, that they're getting value, as you mentioned, right? And that they're solving their problems. And what better way of doing it?
That's it.
Woo. Great conversation, Matt. This is fantastic. I know you are You understand so much more of the architecture and the ecosystem of emails than most. And I think we need to know more. So where can we find out more about you and your amazing book?
Yeah, thank you. Look, if any of the things I've been saying are of interest, you can get three chapters of my book for free on my site, naturalordersbook.com. So naturalordersbook.com. Yep, first three chapters.
Awesome. And what are we going to get in those first three chapters?
You'll get a bit of an explanation for why take the ecological approach to email marketing. And we'll also go into some of this stuff about the walled gardens. So some of the stuff we've been talking about today, it'll include the chapter that really talks about that in depth. And it might be of interest to readers because I really dispel some myths there around why you shouldn't have all your traffic reliant on some of these third-party sources.
Whew, isn't that the truth? I mean, gosh, with every other month there's a change, right? And something gets limited or blocked or changed or okay, yes. We can go on about that one and more.
Yeah,
All right.
absolutely.
Yeah. All right, listeners, I hope you found a couple ideas to put into your business that will help you be more profitable. And I know that, email marketing is not dead. I was just pulling the tail to start the conversation, but it is such a valuable place to have a conversation with your customer. They're carrying it around on their computer and in their back pocket. It's always around. It's always there. It's never going away until they hit delete and then empty their inbox, right? Or their trash can. So it's always there for them. And I think it's a great tool that maybe if we do it right, it will get opened better and hit your audience more impactfully. So I encourage you to go check out Matt's book, figure out how you can make your email marketing better and engage with your audience more appropriately. All right, as I mentioned, if you want to supercharge your business, go download my new Profit Booster Playbook, packed with three strategies, profit strategies, and actionable steps that you can use to make this your most profitable year ever. Go grab it for free at boostingprofit.com. And Matt and I would always love to hear your feedback questions. Tell us what you are doing with email and why it is or isn't working, or if you've got an idea or just a question, hit us up in the comments and Matt and I will respond and communicate with you that way and get things started. Maybe help you shift your thinking and boost your email marketing. While you're at it, please subscribe. You don't want to miss the future podcasts. As always, you can catch Profit with a Plan on any of your favorite podcast players, and we're looking forward to more great profitable information on next week's show. So until then, make your plans and profit with them. Thanks so much, Matt.
Thank you for having me.